Tentor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Polygamy, a Very Short Introduction by Sarah M.S. Pearsall, narrated by Holly Adams. Publisher's note: this audiobook may refer to visual elements included in the print and ebook editions of the book. Introduction. Has marriage traditionally been only one man plus one woman? Of course not. For much of human history, over most of the globe, the most common alternative to this model was polygamy, marriage involving more than two spouses. Polygamy, or plural marriage, has been an accepted form of union in the majority of human societies among every major world religion. People living on every continent have practiced this form of marriage. Some still do. Plural marriages, like more recent same-sex marriages, offer intriguing access to the workings of the institution of marriage, as well as the controversies linking public and private, sex and politics, that have surrounded it. The story of this marriage form is a political history, not simply a social or domestic one. Marriage, whether monogamous or polygamous, has been a central way of organizing power across human history. Marriage defines family life, rendering certain relationships legitimate and allowing for inheritance and the distribution of property. For rulers across human history, marriages, including plural ones, have had particular significance, legitimating offspring, strengthening kingdoms, and ensuring takeovers. More broadly, defining some marriages as civilized and progressive, and some as backward and barbaric, has staked out a set of claims about the superiority of some people over others, with implications for race, religion, economics, culture, and society. This process excluded certain kinds of people from a wider nation or community. Putting these boundaries in place took centuries, even millennia, and involved people around the globe. Ideas about polygamy and what it means reveal much, not only about gender, but also about race, nation, and civilization itself. This topic can seem marginal, but in fact, it is powerfully significant, even if we do not always think about it. Indeed, the silent, embedded nature of what I have elsewhere called the infrastructure of monogamy shapes our worlds in ways we do not always appreciate. People in the early 21st century often think of polygamy in one of two ways: as either pious, prairie dress-clad Mormon wives in the American West, or a Turkish harem with half-naked women guarded by eunuchs. Two pictures from the 1880s United States, one a photo of an actual Utah family, the other a whiskey advertisement, encapsulate these stereotypes. The former is a product of the 19th century, and the other goes back several centuries earlier. Neither captures the rich and variegated history of global polygamy. Still, these reductive images matter because they have informed all kinds of accounts and assertions. They have even influenced laws, as when the U.S. Supreme Court ruled against allowing plural marriages in the United States in 1879, declaring that polygamy was almost exclusively a feature of the life of Asiatic and of African people. Europeans and Americans have over centuries cast polygamy as an inferior form of marriage, one that indicates the problematic nature of certain people. They thus tied domestic organization to political, cultural, and racial categories. Polygamy has complex politics within as well as beyond households. Confrontations over this type of marriage have been historically significant, especially in a range of colonial, imperial, and missionary encounters. They have influenced contacts between different peoples. Moreover, they have provoked debates within particular cultures and countries. Although polygamy could seem like a problematic form of marriage, even amid Christians, it has had notable defenders, including a number of radical Protestants such as John Milton, the author of Paradise Lost, and Joseph Smith, the founder of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, Mormonism. It is not always easy to define or even to identify polygamy, and there have been various kinds. Most have been forms of polygyny, a husband with more than one wife, although there are occasional practices of polyandry, one wife with many husbands. Nearly all global instances of polygamy involve polygyny, not polyandry. One of the few notable exceptions occurs among some modern Himalayan people, among whom a woman, in marrying an eldest brother, is considered to have married all his brothers. Polygamy includes both forms, but in practice, it has mostly been polygyny. There is no single monolithic polygamy. The term itself has been contested, with a preference in some contexts for plural marriage, or in the case of Mormons, celestial marriage, or the principle. The word polygamy is used here partly to indicate that it is an imagined system as much as a lived reality, and for ease of reference. Still, each society's practices of plural marriage differed, and they were dynamic, changing systems. Moreover, the line between married and not married has not always been clear to communities or even to individual households, and there have been forms of union not recognized by law. There have been temporary or short-term secondary marriages contracted for a set amount of time, which have sometimes been sources of controversy. Centuries ago, a Wendat man in northeastern North America could marry a woman with full ritual. She became his Atdenotha, or wife. In addition, he could contract a short-term marriage with a woman who became his Atsqua, or concubine. Conflict has often attended different definitions of who was married, and communities have not always been aligned with what the state saw as marriage. For instance, the law did not recognize the marriages of enslaved individuals in Anglophone colonies in mainland North America and the Caribbean. Yet even masters and mistresses identified husbands and wives among enslaved people, as did some churches. So it is not always easy to make clear who is married, whether in monogamy or in polygamy. This book focuses on situations of public, legal polygamy in which the spouses knew about each other rather than what one anthropologist has called de facto polygamy, or the countless examples of someone having multiple sexual or romantic partners, or keeping secret wives in different places, or what we might call serial monogamy. These situations have occurred in virtually every society. What concerns us here is something more particular, defined by law. Admittedly, it is impossible to draw the lines entirely clearly, especially for earlier eras. As supporters of polygamy have pointed out, men in particular have often had multiple sexual partners, but polygamy, unlike adultery or fornication, confers the benefits of legal marriage, as well as the public status of a wife, with rights to support and inheritance on the women involved. In addition, it legitimates any children of the union. The history of polygamy connects with the history of divorce. Some Catholics in particular have considered marriage with legal divorce and remarriage a form of serial polygamy, equally deserving of condemnation. Some proponents of polygamy advocated for divorce as well, seeing both as a way to circumvent unhappy marriages. The focus here is on formal polygamy, publicly practiced. There has been considerable diversity, but the practice of polygyny has often had certain unifying themes. First, polygamy reveals a great deal about gender and its operations. Marriage has fundamentally ordered what women and men do and the roles they have. It is more obvious what men have historically obtained through polygamy, access to women, and their sexual, reproductive, and productive labor. It brings more children, binding a man's kin connections. It thus supports patriarchy and men's public importance, as well as their domestic potency. For women, The advantages of polygamy can be harder to see, and certainly some situations of polygamy have offered few. The mere fact that most polygamy has been polygyny suggests the profound and ubiquitous gender imbalances it entails. Some situations have allowed women to gain status as especially senior wives of powerful men. In some forms of polygamy, wives could share child care and household labor. Women, too, could benefit from a wider range of kin connections. Women have used polygyny to limit births, as a husband has more children, but each plural wife has fewer. In eras before reliable birth control, that is, most of human history, birth limitation could offer an advantage for women. This book considers, as much as possible, the perspectives of the wives who lived polygamy, though this is not always easy to do, because they left far fewer first-hand accounts, especially in earlier periods. Sex and reproduction form a second major theme. The classic image, as the whiskey ad suggests, is that men enjoy the access to multiple women's bodies that polygyny provides. In some cases, they have. However, too much focus on this aspect obscures what polygamy does in terms of reproduction. Polygamy has worked in tandem with populations keen to build themselves up, whether in ancient Israel or in the 19th century United States. It has been possible, even in many mostly monogamous systems, for a man to take a second wife if the first wife could not bear children. Such has been true for royal and aristocratic families in particular. Populations emphasizing the need for population growth, and with a relative dearth of men in particular, as in the aftermath of wars, have tended to allow the practice of polygamy, and it is a system that flourishes where wealth is measured in people rather than in land or property. This point about wealth in people leads to a third theme, labor and slavery. Marriage has been a way of dividing labor in the household, and wives in many cultures have done a great deal of work to support the provision of food and hospitality in particular. In such situations, polygamy enabled high-ranking men to support their larger household. In some times and places, secondary wives could be enslaved, and at points they could surmount their status as slaves by becoming plural wives and mothers. Systems of polygamy have often worked in tandem with those of slavery. Both, assigning rank, were ways of exploiting labor, sometimes from the same enslaved woman who bore children and did menial tasks. Rank and status are a fourth area of importance. Polygamy has historically been a system of inequality between men and women, but it also reveals other hierarchies, both among women and among men. Wives in such systems experienced subordination to the husband, of course, but sometimes to other wives and women in the husband's household, including a mother-in-law or a sister-in-law. Some plural wives were managers and queens, and some were enslaved. Polygyny has tended to take place in societies that practice patrilocal marriage, that is, marriage in which wives join their husbands' communities. Such wives were often more vulnerable, far from the protection of their families. Sometimes they joined households in which a mother-in-law or a senior wife reigned supreme. In some cases, wives carried with them the rank from their families. Those who came with bride wealth, protected by complex family negotiations, tended to have greater status, while those who came in as enslaved or chore wives tended to have little. In general, though not always, senior or first wives had the greatest authority, though they might not be the personal favorite of the husband. Polygamy has supported masculine ambitions to authority, status, and resources. High-ranking men have practiced it most. It both augments and demonstrates their ability to command resources and people. Men speak to other men of their power by showing off their plural wives. In royal settings in particular, it has served the ambitions of the ruling dynasty and it has been a way of incorporating tribute states, with women sent as wives to the center of power. Since elite men predominated among those practicing polygamy, this marriage form emerged at the center of various clashes of cultures and religions, a fifth major theme. Many of the most powerful indigenous men around the world, whether among the Mixteca or the Maori, have practiced plural marriage. Two of three major monotheistic religions, Judaism and Islam, have formally allowed its practice and even occasionally encouraged it. By contrast, Christianity has mostly, though not exclusively, rejected polygamy, attempting to impose monogamy on a variety of populations. This Christian emphasis on exclusive monogamy has led to a range of conflicts, especially between Christian European missionaries and authorities and other people across the globe. Finally, this European emphasis on monogamy, which came to be tied to Christianity and ideas about progress, has led to an association of polygamy with people, usually non-Europeans, whom Europeans deemed less civilized. Race, nation, and exclusion, then, form a sixth major theme. Ideas about polygamy, how it operates, and who practices it have contributed to racecraft and the idea that certain races have lived in particular forms of marital and sexual organization. Polygamy came to be cast as a more primitive kind of marriage associated with indigenous people who were therefore seen as less modern. Race has thus been tied with gender and marriage regimes. Whole nations could be condemned as backward merely for allowing practices like polygamy to continue. Polygamy has shaped internal debates over domestic reform, as well as international discussions about which nations qualify as civilized. Polygamy, then, has marked the boundaries of progress and civilization in ways both personal and intimate, and public and international. The broad history of polygamy is partly about change and the dynamic nature of debates and lived experiences of polygamy. Polygamy has altered over time and cultures. Nevertheless, its history reveals continuities, too, especially in condemnations of polygamy as an inferior marriage form. This subject illuminates with extraordinary intensity the public importance of the intimate, as well as the symbolic and actual importance of marriage in defining individuals and societies. Polygamy has framed cultural contact and confrontation, the shape of empires, slavery and hierarchy, royal and aristocratic power, religion and conflict, war and expansion, race and nation. In drawing lines of civility and progress, it continues to influence the modern world in abiding ways. To understand the complicated unfolding of this process across the world, though, it helps to start a long time ago. Chapter 1. Origins and Overview. After years of childlessness, one of the most important biblical wives encouraged her husband to take another woman into his bed. In the Old Testament book of Genesis, Sarah, who was barren, suggested that her husband Abraham should take her maid Hagar as a second wife or concubine so that they could have a son. Abraham did, and Hagar bore Ishmael. Sarah then went on to bear a son, Isaac, with Abraham. The dynamics of this plural marriage became complicated, yet they also brought much-loved offspring, thus peopling the world. This situation has implied that polygamy could be, and indeed was, blessed. The tale has resonated for millennia as both a story of lived experience and an organizing mythology. The ancient Israelite practice of polygamy echoes in other forms in various parts of the ancient and medieval world from six continents. There were distinct iterations of polygamy in diverse political and social contexts. Overall, though, polygamy allowed for resource building, diplomatic links, and the creation of significant networks. It was vital in numerous situations of royal power, linking the center with the regions under its control. It depended on the labor and the endurance of women, who were central to men's ability to mobilize people and resources. Moreover, it had implications for demographic growth, for the spacing of births by wives, and for the replacement of populations of men lost through war. In large parts of the world in ancient, medieval, and even modern eras, the state depended on personal power, and in particular, on the authority of mostly male rulers. In such systems, polygamy has made sense. It connected royal and aristocratic authority. It demonstrated royal masculine power, as well as augmenting it. It produced children who provided diplomatic linkages through their own relationships. It rewarded loyalty and service by high-ranking men. It established and cemented hierarchies of rank as well as gender. Linked to systems of slavery and conquest, women and their productive and reproductive labor underpinned diplomatic and political relations. For some plural wives, polygamy looked like slavery. For others, it looked like leadership. A desire for fruitfulness in marriage propelled early practices of polygamy. The first written law code in the world, that of Hammurabi around 1780 BCE, allowed a man with a barren or diseased wife to take a second wife. At the same time, it mandated that the second wife should not be seen as equal to the first. In the biblical story in Genesis 2, polygamy stemmed from infertility. When Hagar conceived Ishmael with Abraham, her mistress was despised in her eyes. Fertility could upend rank hierarchies, but such inversions might not last. God promised Abraham and Sarah a son, even though they were very old. After they miraculously had Isaac, Sarah became determined to send Hagar and Ishmael away. Abraham agreed to this exile. A fragile domestic equilibrium was thus reestablished. God later rewarded Abraham for obedience with the covenant of enduring fruitfulness for his people. I will multiply thy seed as the stars of the heaven and as the sand which is upon the seashore. Between God and polygamy, Abraham was assured not just of having sons, but also of having generations of descendants multiplying over the earth. Genesis chapter 16, verses 3 through 4, chapter 22, verse 17. Women and children were at the center of this Genesis tale, though the Hebrew Bible overall focuses on men. This unexpected inclusion of Sarah and Hagar, as well as young Ishmael and Isaac, highlights the centrality of women and children in a society based on kinship. The agency of women mattered a great deal, even in patriarchal societies such as ancient Israel. At the same time, the strangeness of the story and its complicated lines remind us of the considerable difficulties of knowing how polygamy has worked across times and places. While this elaborate tale in Genesis gives oblique insight into the household practices of ancient Israelites, it is shrouded in the mists of time. The practice was challenging for Sarah and Hagar, as well as Abraham, but in the end, it seems to have resolved certain problems, especially those around infertility. Given the lack of sources, though, there is much we do not know. What we can know is that junctions to be fruitful and multiply weighed most heavily on women. It was their tired and unwieldy bodies carrying pregnancies and enduring births, their breasts engorging with milk to nurse babies, their arms and backs most often carrying little ones through fields and villages. It was women who disproportionately bore the stigma and shame of childlessness and infertility. Women had an important role in the economic well-being of families. In ancient Israel, as in many other parts of the ancient and medieval world, women had an especially vital role in food processing and preparation. They did the work of grinding grain, and they baked the bread that sustained life. Building a population depended on sex and reproduction, And in the Old Testament, plural wives often underpinned this demographic growth. Keeping those populations going required the food processing and production performed by women. The Old Testament is filled with stories of kings who gained power through the reproductive and domestic labor of multiple wives. Saul had several wives, as did David. Rehoboam had 18 wives and 60 concubines, while Solomon had no fewer than 700 wives and 300 concubines. The power of these men was counted in wives and children. Yet even Solomon received no condemnation for marrying so often. His only domestic fault was that a number of his wives came from people with whom the Israelites were not supposed to intermarry. In such systems, however, power rarely accrued to the wives themselves, despite all they did. Instead, it was the royal mothers of kings who claimed the greatest feminine authority. The authority of wives was too dispersed. Among the ancient Israelites, a patrilocal people, wives moved from their own communities and into those of their husbands, often ending up under the supervision of mothers-in-law and senior wives. Senior women often had an important role in Chinese households, too, especially royal ones. In its long history, China has had a generally consistent system of formal monogamy, but with a range of concubines and maids allowed, even encouraged, for prosperous men. The emperor could only take one wife, but he was supposed to have multiple consorts. One second-century ruler, Shun Quan of the Kingdom of Wu, was an impressive leader with a fatal flaw. He failed to distinguish between his wife and concubines. The resulting domestic chaos made him a laughingstock. Although Chinese emperors were expected to sire numerous offspring, they were not supposed to enjoy it too much. Such self-indulgence was suspect in Confucian teachings. Keeping favorites, too, could be a problem. In the 6th century, the Chen emperor was supposedly so preoccupied with his favorite concubine, who sat on his lap during court business, that he lost his dynasty to attacking Cui warriors. In the 16th century, courtiers reminded Qiang Zong, the Ming emperor besotted with his favorite, having sons depends on there being many mothers. An empress was expected to preside over these various mothers with grace and authority. In the 3rd century, Jin Emperor Wu received concubines from conquests, but they were vetted by the empress herself. The ancient Mao commentary praised an empress who not only avoided jealousy, but also created harmony among the concubines. Wives had formally recognized children with the emperor, but so did consorts. Consorts could come from a range of backgrounds, but they and their children could rise high. In fact, the mothers of Yongcheng, Qianlong, and Jiaqin emperors had all been bondservants. The politics of polygamy played out differently in other settings, but here, too, there were tight connections between royal power and polygamy. In Siam, in what is now Thailand, the ruler had the authority to instigate polygamy for himself and others in the medieval and modern eras. Classic Thai Buddhist texts celebrated the potency of rulers and their plural wives, as in the Trai Phum Phra Ruang, a cosmology attributed to the 14th century King Ruang. There was no word for polygamy in the Thai language, but the concept exists as the principle of having many wives simultaneously. The Family Code of 1361 enshrined this principle, recognizing four legal types of wives. The first group of wives, in marriages brokered by the king himself, had the highest rank. The next category of wives were those given by their parents in protracted negotiations that preserved their inheritance and rights in the event of death or marital breakdown. The third type were those married through personal choice, lacking the family protection of the second category. The fourth and lowest-ranking wives were enslaved ones, who had little by way of rights to inheritance or property or child custody in the event of any problems. These categories of wives mattered in terms of legal outcomes and in terms of the dynamics of these households, organizing hierarchies among the wives in these plural marriages. Enslaved wives were subject to the will and whim not only of the husband.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?